This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. Almost 2 years after Great Britain voted to leave the European Union with its Brexit vote, some political leaders in another key country in Europe are making rumblings that they're unhappy. There are signs that Italy's place in the EU and the use of the euro currency could be tenuous.
That prospect sent world financial markets falling earlier this week, but not everyone is overly concerned. Where does Art Sear fall on that spectrum of opinion? He is our regular foreign policy contributor, and he joins us in the studio. Always nice to see you.
Well, the feeling is very mutual, Mitch. I appreciate participating on your fine program.
So let's start in Europe, if we can. Italy, to be specific, which faces the prospect, a couple of prospects, actually, one of another election after its president blocked two populist parties from forming a coalition government. Let's start with that. What is happening in Italy, and how is it related to other movements that have involved pushback against the European Union in places like Britain and Germany?
Italy, this is nothing new in Italy in the sense that they have a history and a tradition, in fact, of unsteady, unstable, insecure governments. I think it's related in one dimension to corruption, in another dimension to an historically weak economy. For decades, Turkey was referred to as the sick man of Europe. Perhaps we should say sick person on public radio today. They were succeeded by Italy, and then Britain seemed to overshadow them during hard times in the 50s and even the 60s. But Britain is in a much stronger position and probably always was. Italy has the image, the reputation of being a weak country and a weak government system. So this is nothing new. And the media, one important reason why we have public media, among others, is you put things in context, and there's nothing new to this.
At the same time, Italy was one of the countries that pushed hardest for a common currency, wasn't it?
Yes, and Italy initially pushed hard for the European Union. Initially, the first strong institutional collaboration outside of military affairs was the European Economic Community in 57. And the Treaty of Rome included the Federal Republic of Germany, which was most important, Italy, France, and then the small countries, Benelux, shorthand for Belgium, the Netherlands, and Luxembourg. So Italy has been a consistent advocate of integration.
So then this latest bout of instability, you would not think poses any more a particular threat to the stability of the European Union than anything else?
No. Because the German economy is right next door to Italy, and in this sense, the economic sense being next door to Germany, in the economic sense is all to the good. I think historically as well as currently, the crisis generated in the European Union through the weakness in the euro and heavy debt in Latin Europe generally, but especially in Greece, about a decade ago, just before and during the serious international recession. That was a much more serious situation. And what's interesting to me is the durability of the euro. There were a lot of predictions that Greece might leave the European Union, a much smaller economy. It seems more plausible for them, but of course they didn't.
You were talking about the relative instability in Italy. There is, of course, one exception to this, and that is the figure of Silvio Berlusconi.
Yes. For one thing, he has tremendous public popularity, and as you and I were discussing off the air, I believe that's kind of hard to understand. He's not an attractive man. He's not an attractive figure or a leader. He's rightly seen as having a lot of vices and being pretty corrupt. He's also enormously rich. Italy, by contemporary standards, has more political corruption than some other countries, including our own. Also, interest group influence peddling, old-fashioned horse trading and deal-making is important in any system, and he is a genius, by all accounts, especially at behind-the-scenes maneuvering. We can all thank goodness that and thank the law that he is now barred from holding public office, but he remains very much a gray eminence, a very prominent one, but somebody who's extremely influential. He can pull a lot of strings.
Right. He cannot hold public office, but that has not precluded him from still looming as this enormous public figure.
Yes. And to be fair, which is always important, he's obviously highly intelligent, highly unattractive, but highly intelligent. And he's extremely good at making money and has been from a very young age and consistently. And as Joseph Kennedy once said, money talks.
Well, let's pivot now to Asia and the on-again, off-again, and apparently on-again summit between North Korea and the United States. It was not that long ago that it looked like things were off when there were rumblings from North Korea that were immediately followed by President Trump calling off the summit. What do you see going on there?
I think it's – well, our president, you don't need me to say that he's unpredictable in terms of his moves, especially his public statements. And
North Korea is pretty unpredictable too sometimes as well.
Well, they've been predictably erratic on military matters. You're quite right. They've been around a lot longer than our current president has been in office. They are erratic in terms of their threats and then holding out the olive branch. It's also extremely important to keep in mind that for all the overheated rhetoric and scary threats and missile and weapon developments, especially but not just in the nuclear realm, the armistice is held. Since Dwight Eisenhower, as soon as taking office, achieved an armistice through the most brutal and ruthless and bloody military means, I want to emphasize, because we all tend to forget that, the North Koreans haven't. The armistice is held. There's been no war. There have been sporadic incidents of violence and great brutality by North Korea, but the armistice is held. There hasn't been a war there, and it's a very stable environment. I'm very glad you brought up North Korean unpredictability.
What do you think is the most that we could expect from a summit should it go forward?
I think it's hard to say. I think it could be a good icebreaker. In the most senior sense, summits go best when subordinates have done all the really hard work in serious diplomacy and negotiation internationally. The gold standard is Richard Nixon going to Beijing and also to Moscow to open the door to China and sign two important strategic nuclear arms deals, treaties, and they really were treaties in 1972. Tremendous amount of groundwork precluded that, but they can be useful for other reasons. Khrushchev's visit to the U.S. and meeting with Eisenhower at the end of the 50s, and as the Soviet Union was disintegrating, President George H.W. Bush meeting with Gorbachev at Malta. It's in that context of an era of maybe good feeling that this would be most worthwhile. Let me go on a little longer, if I may, because
sure.
Most important to me isn't what's emanating from the White House, but the fact that the two Korean leaders have had now two meetings in short order. It's not the first meeting between the head of North Korea and South Korea. There have been two others in recent years, but it's the first time the head of North Korea has gone to the South, at least to the DMZ, to meet. I believe President Moon of South Korea is a remarkably effective, intelligent, and able leader with extraordinary credentials, and we really should be watching South Korea, especially since our president is dominating the news related to this part of the world. But look, keep an eye on South Korea.
Well, and presumably South Korea has to be incredibly concerned about what might come out of a summit between the U.S. and North Korea.
They might be, but I don't think they are. Our relationship is so close, especially in the military sphere, starting with our very heroic and courageous decision to join the UN in defending South Korea in June of 1950 when the North Koreans invaded. There's a very powerful emotional commitment to the U.S. by South Koreans. They kept 50,000 troops in South Vietnam throughout our long war there. Remarkable how much we forget these kinds of things. They were there only because they were close allies of the U.S., and they were almost all combat troops, unlike our forces. Tremendous, very immediate human commitment to the U.S.
And also at the same time, there are two other big power players in that sphere, one of whom is pretty openly concerned about North Korea, and that's Japan.
Yes. Well, I think China is also concerned and annoyed. South Korea is a major source and a rapidly growing source of foreign investment and all kinds of positive cooperation in China, mainly but not exclusively in business. North Korea is the poor relation who won't go away and keeps causing trouble, and the police keep coming over, and a real pain in the neck. And China has a tremendous interest in limiting the subsidy and reducing the danger involved in supporting North Korea, as do the Russians. But let me return. Historically, North Korea has wanted to avoid any recognition of South Korea. They don't exist. We deal directly with Washington. And that's now over. That's gone. And we're not going to go back, even if Pyongyang characteristically suddenly pulls the rug out from under things and says, we're going to break off relations. We're not going to negotiate. No more economic cooperation. They are really hurting badly. I mentioned the UN. They're hurting very badly from coordinated international economic sanctions. Even the elite, I'm confident, is starting to suffer. And secondly, we are ironically overshadowing them. The fact that our current president is so erratic in his own statements, not necessarily in what we do in policy terms, but in his own statements, it tends to provide an opportunity for stability on the peninsula, I believe. I hope that's clear.
There's always stability in the studio when you are here to talk with us. Art Sear.
Well, thanks, Mitch.
Thank you so much.
Lake Effect contributor Art Sear is a professor of political economy and world business, and he's the director of the Clausen Center for World Business at Carthage College in Kenosha.